Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the second day of Rosh Chodesh Adar, which is the first of Adar, actually. And today we're going to talk about Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva, his response on the question of wearing Hatzalah walkie-talkies on Shabbat. The tshuva is from Igrot Moshe, the fourth volume of Orach Chaim Siman Pei Aleph, and is dated the second day of Rosh Chodesh Adar of Tavshin Lamed Tet of 1979. So the basic facts are, so the facts of the case were that Hatzalah was already an organization that was starting to be what it is today, a remarkable organization that's available for when Jews get ill and has ambulance services and paramedics come to help them, often very much faster than they could have gotten help otherwise, and they do this on Shabbos as well. So the people who are involved in Hatzalah, who might get called on a call, the way that they tend to do it is they wear over their clothing, on their clothing, a walkie-talkie. And the point is that when they get a call to go someplace, they can then know to go it. Now, it's a way for them to hear and to know from the central office where to go. Can you wear that on Shabbat? And now, you could have asked that question, just wearing it on Shabbat, and just visit Mukhs or something like that, but that seems clear that it's not, because, and Rav Moshe doesn't really deal with that, because I think it's because it's something that you're using on Shabbat for the purpose of saving lives, and therefore it should be okay. The question that's being raised here is, let's say there's no Eruv, can you wear it? Isn't it like carrying? So that's the question Rav Moshe Feinstein is going to answer in this response. So he says, he points out, we have a Mishnah that says, there's a debate in the Mishnah, about whether a man can wear a sword or a bow and arrow on Shabbat, right? It's Gemara in Da Shabbos, Daf Samach Gimel, and the Machloket Rabbi Eliezer says yes, and Chachamim say no. So this says yes because it's like what's called a tachshit. Now the word tachshit in modern Hebrew means a decoration. So you might think it means like a decoration, but what he means is it's something that you wear that it gives you status, something that you wear, and there's a value in wearing it. It's not a piece of clothing, but it nonetheless is part of your presentation to the public. That's sort of much more what we mean by tashi. It's not that it's jewelry. It's that Rabbi Lezer says a man who's wearing a sword is a more impressive man, at least in their times for sure, because you see that he has power, he has the ability to, whatever it is, to enforce his will, and things like that. And Chachamim say no, because it's not a tachshit, it's lignai. So lignai means that it really, you might think that it adds to your presentation, but it actually is a gnai, it is a negative thing to be wearing. The fact that somebody is wearing, you think that they're a thing, they add to your presentation, but in fact that's an error. They really take away from it, because they're really a sign of a world in which people need weapons and they need force and they need power to enforce their will and to protect themselves and things like that. And the way that they say that is, you see that the Pasuk Yeshayahu says that in the future, that they will beat their swords into plowshares, as the famous translation goes, right? So if Yeshayahu is telling us that in the future we're not going to have swords, and that's part of the future, then it shows, Chachamim say, that swords are not a thing of beauty. They're a marker of an unredeemed world in which swords are still necessary. So based on that debate, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, you see that when we talk about, Chachamim don't say it's not clothing, right? It sounds like if Rabbi Eliezer was right that the sword is a tachshit, that they would agree that you could wear it on Shabbat, even in a place where there's no Eruv, even in a place there's nothing allowing carrying in places on Shabbat. So they apparently agree with that logic, because their response is that it's not in fact a tachshit. So, but that sounds like if you have things, even though they're not clothing and they're not specifically decorative, gaminam kishutin shemiyapim, that make you look better in some very obvious way, if they're the kinds of thing that improves your presentation in some way, so na'asuba chashivut tachshitin, me'achar shezeh mar'eh chashivut ha'adam, if it shows some important position that you have, some important role that you play in society, that suffices for it to be considered a tachshit for Shabbat services, purposes, and therefore you're allowed to wear it even when there's no Eruv. So in the case of the walkie-talkie, in other words, Rav Moshe is saying, it's not that you're allowed to wear the walkie-talkie and outside without an Eruv, because you need the walkie-talkie to use. That's why you don't consider it muksa and things like that. But you're allowed to wear it without an Eruv because it's considered part of your clothing, because people who look at this person say, oh, he's in Hatzalah. So if he's an Atzalah, oh, that's an important guy. That's a guy who's going to be useful if something ever goes wrong. That element of it, says Rosh Feinstein, is similar to what a story would have been for Rabbi Elazar, and what Chachamim seem to have agreed to, if not for the fact that they think a sword is a gnai, a sword is really actually a negative proposition. And Rabbi Elazar's source for the sword one was, Chagor Harbecha al Yarech Gibor, put your sword on strap your sword on, hero or a courageous one. So if that's true, it shows that a gibor is a kind of sign of a nobility, a kind of an upper level kind of a thing. It shows you're at a higher level than other people. So that would be the kind of thing that allows you to wear it on Shabbat. Now the Amoraim there wondered about if Rabbi Elazar thinks that way, then how did he explain that Yeshayahu says that we won't have swords anymore in the future, right? Chacham's point is, it may be that it feels that way now, but from the way that Yeshayahu predicts the future, we see that swords are in fact not good things, as we hope for a time when they're not used anymore, when all the weapons are turned into items used more for human settlement rather than for death and destruction. So how does Rabbi Elazar explain that pasuk in Yeshayahu if he thinks it is currently a tachshit? Now, it's interesting to me that I don't think anybody has the possibility that, well, we'll see. So, the Gemara has two possibilities, two answers about how that's going to work. The first answer just says, because you're not going to need them anymore, because there's lo yisa goy el goy cherev. In other words, really, Ezra's saying that Rabbi Elazar would be saying, according to this view in the Amoraim, in the Gemara, he would be saying that as long as swords are necessary, they're a tachshit. It's not that they're inherently a tachshit, inherently a marker of somebody's nobility and greatness. It's that if you live in a time when you need it, then in those times. So Rabbi Elazar is saying you mark this definition of tachshit or not in Shabbos purposes, not by some ultimate view of whether it's valuable and good, but by the needs of current society. Chachamim, basically, when they say you see in the future that it's not good, that means Chachamim is saying, even now it's not really good. Even now it's only good in the world in which we live, but that's not good. Rabbi Elazar says, no, that's good enough. So that seems to be one way to view their debate about whether you can wear a sword on Shabbat, which have relevance to Hatzalah we'll get to in a second. So the question in the Gemara there is, if that's what you say, that in the future they won't need them because people won't go to war anymore, because the Pasuk of Lo Yisa Goy El Goy Cherev, the nations will not take swords and get up against each other. They will not fight against each other. They will not have wars. So the Gemara says, but I don't say so, wear it as a decoration, meaning why not say that wearing a sword shows that you are the kind of a person who once upon a time could have used this sword, and that'll be a marker of how great you are, meaning it would be sort of similar to, let's say, if you have an old soldier who's, decrepit now just because he's physically not able to fight anymore, but if they go to a full dress appearance, it's part of their full dress thing that they wear a sword. It's not because they're going to actively use it right now. It's a decoration that shows what they once were. So why not say that for the future? Why would Yeshayahu say, no, you're not going to wear it anymore. It's going to be ignite to wear a sword. So Abaye there says, Midei dahava ashraga betihara. Abaye says, like having a candle in the daytime. That's one option. We'll come back to it a little bit. Rosh Feinstein, we'll come back to it a little bit in a minute. But basically his saying is, it doesn't make sense to be a decoration if it's completely unneeded. It's one thing for me to say that in a world where people still use swords, I can have somebody who's no longer going to use a sword, but he will wear it as a decoration, and it'll make the point that he was the kind of a person who used swords. But at a time when swords are completely irrelevant, it's meaningless. It would be like today wearing a sword, right? When nobody uses swords anymore for anything. The other opinion in the Gemara over there is that, in fact, Rabbi Elazar did not think wars would go away completely in the future, and therefore wearing a sword would still be a marker of something. That's what it seems to say. It says, because he holds the Avli Yimon HaMashiach Einan B'Tehilim, wars are not going to go away Yimon HaMashiach, because he holds, like Shmuel, this is another debate you have in the Gemara about the days of the Messiah. One view seems to have it that the days of the Messiah will be these miraculous times when, for example, Lo Yisa Goy El Goy Cherev, there will never be any war anymore, and the world will change in very important and fundamental ways. But there is an opinion in the Gemara of Shmuel's, and this is the opinion that Rambam seems to adopt, and others too, but Rambam is well known for adopting it, and it is the opinion that I sort of adopted in the novel that I wrote once upon a time called Murderer in the Mikdash, which you can find on Amazon and stuff. It's set in the time of a third Beit HaMikdash, and for the purposes of being able to write a murder mystery, I made it like a time where everything else is the same, which is what Shmuel says. Ein bein olam hazeh l'yimot ha-mashiach, ela shibut malchiyot bilvad. The only difference between now and the Messianic era is shibut malchiyot, is that it's hard to translate this. Shibut malchiyot sounds like it means the subservience of other nations, that the Jews will control other nations. The level of that is, I think, an open question. But in that view of it, of if you hold like Shmuel, as Rambam seems to, then it would seem that there would be wars, right? It's only the Jews who are going to be in control of other nations, and let's say that'll mean that the Jews won't have any wars. That would be lo yisal goyel goy cheref, would mean that the Jews won't have any wars, but everybody else will have wars. It's a hard thing, because it's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, so the Rosh Hashanah says, Shmuel has to agree that lo yisal goyel goy, lo yavo goy, that no other nation will come in war against the Jews, because there's a pasuk in Yeshayahu that says that. Because Shibud Malchiot, it seems to me that the Jews will be in control, though. It seemed to me that they won't have any wars. So, Rav Moshe recognized there's another way to read it. So, one second. Let's just follow this train of thought before we go to the other possibilities. He's saying, if this opinion, if Abaye is going to hold, that Rabbi Eliezer was following the opinion of Shmuel, that the future time will be a time when there won't be any war for the Jewish people. That's what Lo Yisal Goy El Goy Cheref, but there will be war for other peoples because there's no difference between now and the future other than Shibud Malchiot, so then it's still true that Jews won't have any wars, and if it's true that Jews won't have any wars, why would wearing a sword be an acceptable kind of a thing? Meaning this answer, which was not a bias, but this is the Ikad Amri. This Ikad Amri's answer was that there will be war, and it sounds like that means since there will be war, then it's okay to wear a sword because it's still a decoration, it's still a marker of importance. But Moshe Feinstein's question is, I don't understand. There may be war for other nations, but there wouldn't seem to be war for Jews, and if there aren't going to be war for Jews, what kind of a decoration is for a Jew to bring a sword because he doesn't need it anymore? So he's not fully sure that he understands that. So one quick answer you might have given is, it's not true. Jews will have wars. They'll just win them. Right? That would be a way to read Shibud Malchiot, maybe. You would have said Shibud Malchiot means the Jews are in control enough of other nations that whenever wars happen, the Jews will always win them, you know, easily or handily or whatever it is. And the reason he has a problem with that is because there's a Gemara in Erevin on Mem Gimel Amid Bet says that when Mashiach comes, Hakol Avadim Lein Yisrael, all nations will be, now Avadim is a word that can mean a range of things, from slave all the way to much lower levels of subservient. So exactly what it means, it's unclear. But it does mean it's definitely subservient to the Jews. V'chu mehapachat hagadol, from the great fear inspired by the Mashiach. And if he inspires such fear, you know, back in the time of David and Yonatan, they went to war sometimes without weapons at all, and they won. So it's hard to imagine if you're living in a time when Mashiach will inspire such great fear in other nations that they'll be subservient to us, to imagine there'll be wars, and that even if there would be wars, that we would think we would need weapons, because even before we get to the Messianic era, we have a history of people of great merit going to war and winning without those. So the fact that we nowadays need those weapons to succeed in war, that's a marker of our time. But to think that Rav Moshe finds any struggle with the idea that maybe the answer could hold that in the future there would still be wars going on among non-Jews, and therefore Jews would wear swords as it would be considered sufficiently a marker of their importance that they could do so even on Shabbat, despite the fact that they were never going to need them, right? So he thinks it's clear Mashiach's not going to need clay Zion, so why would he wear clay Zion? Then he does notice that the Rambam in Hilchot Melachim in the 11th chapter does say that Melech Mashiach is going to fight wars, because he's going to have to win the world over to service of Hashem, to understand that Hashem runs the world. But it says Rosh Hashanah, but in the next chapter, the Rambam makes clear that the war that he's talking about, the Milchemet Gog and Magog, the war to end all wars, the war that we call Armageddon, based on the fact it's going to happen in Ir Megiddo or Hare Megiddo, so that war is going to happen at the beginning of the Messianic era. But after that, there wouldn't seem to be any war, and in any pasuk in Yecheskel that talks about war, it doesn't seem to talk about it having weaponry in that war for the Jews. So what's going to be going on there? It's that Hashem will fight the wars for us and kill our enemies and Gog and Magog and kill our enemies for us and throw down, you know, stones and fire and brimstone and all that stuff. Right? So, and then now, and it seems over there in Yecheskel, the predictions about the wars of Gog and Magog, that we're not going to take possession of their weapons because we won't need them. We're going to burn them. Right? We're going to turn them into other things. We're going to this. So in what sense could it be that Rabbi Eliezer would think that that explains why wearing a sword in the future or any other kind of weapon in the future would be a marker of status? So he gives, and he points out the Ritva seems to agree with him that that the only way to reach Shmuel is that among the other nations there'll be wars, and that when it says Lo Yisagoy El Goy Cherev, that one nation will never go against the other nation, it doesn't mean only the Jews, it means other nations too, but that's going to be Olam Haba, which is a period beyond Messianic eras, right? In many ways of thinking about the future, the eschatological future, there's Yimod HaMashiach, which move us towards a giant step towards the advanced future of Olam Haba, but it's not quite Olam Haba. That's where the Radvaz reads it, that when we talk about there not being any war anymore, that Pasuk Yeshayahu is for a farther distant future, the Yimona Mashiach. Yimona Mashiach will be a time where the Jews might not have any wars. And even if they had some wars, as Rav Moshe Feinstein just said, you'd think that Mashiach wouldn't need the same kind of weaponry as other people because he'll have Hashem on his side, as we saw with David when he fought Goliath, and with Yonatan when he and his servant went against the whole camp of the Plishtim, showing that when things are going well for the Jewish people, wars can be won without weaponry. So what do we do here with Rabbi Lezer's point of view? So Rav Moshe says you have to say that since other nations will still be having wars, for all that Jews won't be having wars, weaponry will still be a noy, will still be a decoration, will still be a marker of a person's importance, which I think is an interesting idea. I think it's a very sensible idea, but it's an interesting idea, meaning that, you know, in the Wild West, even if I'm the guy who nobody's ever going to go up against battle because they know that I'm the fastest gun shooter in the West, so there's no way they would ever take me on, I might still walk around wearing my belt with my six shooters in them as a marker of how important a person I am, even though I haven't drawn them in 30 years because nobody has ever bothered going up against me, right? It's still, nonetheless, if in the world out there it's considered a marker of importance, it could still be considered a marker of importance for Jews as well, and that's where Rebbe's point of view was. In addition, it might also increase the praise that people give to Hashem, because they'll look at the Jews and say, oh, look at those Jews, they've never used those weapons, they never need those weapons because they have Hashem on their side, and that too could be part of what wearing it would do, and that would make it a tachshit, would make it a marker of their importance and their significance. But the other opinion that says it's more like having a candle in the daytime, Rav Moshe points out, that can't really mean literally the candle in the daytime now, because there are times we use candles in the daytime. We use them as markers of how important a meal is. So meaning even if you're sitting in a place which has some daylight coming in, very often we'll turn on the lights anyway because it makes it brighter. And so that can't be read by a man. So he suggested that by a man, no, in the future when there's psukim that say that the nighttime light will be just as light, the light of the moon will be just as light as the light of the sun, and therefore there'll never be a need for candles, that even then, that then the Chachamim are saying there's no need for it. Actually, he goes on to say that he thinks that really it sounds like for Chachamim, when they say that it must be a gnai, it sounds like they think that if it weren't a negative wearing a sword, and it's a negative shown by the fact that the Pasuk hopes for a time when people won't fight anymore. That shows that the idea of fighting with swords is a negative. If it weren't a negative, it sounds like they think it would still be a tachshit, even though nobody used it. Meaning, if there was an item that nobody ever used anymore, let's say there came a time when doctors were unnecessary, everybody was so healthy, and this is relevant to the Hatzalah question, let's say everybody's so healthy that nobody needs doctors anymore. So then you might say, well, so doctors don't use stethoscopes anymore. So now, what does that mean about wearing a stethoscope? Or is it a marker of importance still because you were once a doctor and you were able to do this, or does it go out of the way? Rabbi Eliezer, who seems to say that despite the fact that they won't wear swords in the future, there's still a tachshit today, seems to say that while they're still needed, there's still a tachshit. But it seems like he thinks that if they're ever really not needed, then in fact, you wouldn't wear them, you wouldn't use them. Whereas Chacham say, no, it's only because it's a gnai, it's a negative thing. So bringing it back to our walkie-talkie question, even though it's true that if there comes a time when everybody's so healthy that you never need doctors, you never have emergencies on Shabbos, you won't need walkie-talkies, so then maybe then you won't wear them anymore, according to Rabbi Eliezer. But now, when people still need doctors, and they still have emergencies, and you need emergency medical technicians and workers, so then wearing these things is a sign of chashivut. It's like a tachshit according to everybody, and therefore this walkie-talkie, he thinks you can wear it even when you don't specifically need it, even on Shabbat, because it's considered like a marker of importance, a status symbol, and you're going to use it if it comes up, but it's also, even when you're not going to use it, if you knew for some Shabbos you weren't going to use it, you'd still be allowed to wear it because it's a marker of some sense of importance, that you're a person who's able to, when they need it, save lives. And he said it's all the more true because it's clearly very difficult for people to give up on, meaning the other possibility was that some Hatzalah workers would volunteer, as it were, to stay home all day, to sit by their walkie-talkie that they can't wear outside where there's no Eruv. So clearly, as the person asking the question asked, and Rav Moshe agrees, you'd have to worry that people would just not join Hatzalah anymore. It's one thing to have to learn all the medical knowledge you need to get trained as a paramedic. It's another thing to then say, yes, and once every three Shabbatot, I'll stay in the house all day or for 6 hours of my shift so that I'm there to hear the walkie-talkie if something comes up. So it's a problem, and Rav Moshe agrees that it's a problem, and then that helps our calculus of how we define these kinds of issues for the purposes of Shabbat. And he also says, you might have another answer you could imagine people coming up with, well, let's on Shabbat just rely on non-Jews, or we'll make some partnership, let's say, and we'll cover Sundays, you know, as it were, and they'll cover Shabbatot. Right? So Moshe says you can't do that, because when it comes to saving lives, we in Halakha think that we don't trust that non-Jews will have the sense of the importance of saving lives in general, that they'll do it with the alacrity that is required and is necessary and important, and therefore we don't want to, outsource these kinds of activities. As the Gemara Yoma says, that when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, we don't use non-Jews because we want to make sure that somebody's going to do all of it with the enthusiasm and the quickness that's necessary to ensure as best possible that we will save Jewish lives. So that's Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva for the second day of Rosh Chodesh Adar, the first day of Adar, about wearing walkie-talkies on Shabbat. There is a tshuva in Shut Mishneh Halachot, also dated to the second day of Rosh Chodesh Adar. This is from Tav Shin Mem from 1980. This is Mishneh Halachot, Volume 8, Tshuva 180, Kuf Pei. And this is about a slightly different Shabbat issue, but also when there's no Eruv. So then the question of how you get a key into a door and how you open a door on Shabbat, especially if you have a door that's not well separated from the general public area, meaning, let's say you don't have a house with a porch. You have a house where there's the street, there's a walk up to the street, and there's three little steps, and then there's the doorway. So those three little steps are not 10 tefachim high, which means that the doorway is not itself separated from, now, that area. Let's say for a second that it's called the public area. It could be a public area like a Rishit HaRabim, a biblical level of public area, or it could be a Carmelite, an open area that's not quite a Rishit HaRabim, and we can't get into the technicalities of that question now. But then it means, and there's no Eruv. That's what we're talking about. If there's an Eruv, it's all no problem, because the Eruv makes it all like it's one big halachic space. So if there's no Eruv, how do you get in and out of your house? So nowadays, that's one of the pushes for people who have, let's say, combination locks on their door. You know, those button locks that people have. That's a very important Shabbat development, because if it's not that, then you have to have a key. Can't carry the key. So let's say either you have one option is you hide the key somewhere right near there so you could pick it up and without walking use the key on the doorway, or let's even say you find a way to wear it on your clothing, which is a whole topic of its own. How do you get the key into the doorway is the question. So the question comes up in the city of Haifa. There was a period where they couldn't trust the Eruv the people didn't trust the Eruv because there were a lot of lenience, halachic lenience in the Eruv. They relied on the sea as being an enclosure for the city, and so the person who's writing the question is unclear about how to handle it. There's another issue that we're not going to get to. I'm just not going to have time for it. But there's another issue that comes up in the Eruvin issues about whether or not, if there are non-Jews living in a city, there's some questions to whether and how you avoid that. So we mentioned, actually, just yesterday's tshuva, we spoke about, the Nodibutas talked about renting the city from the non-Jewish noblemen, and then all the non-Jews in the city have sort of given up their rights in the city. There's a whole question about whether and when that applies to non-observant Jews. I'm sorry, I will say, let me just say it briefly now, that Rav Menashe Klein and Mishneh Halachot suggests that there's a difference between, based on the language of a Rambam, between Jews who don't believe in the religion anymore, but keep it. They don't believe anything. They're mumar, they're minim, they're heretics. They don't believe in the religion, but they keep the Torah. But they don't believe in Eruvin issues. So those people create huge problems where the Jews can make Eruvin, which is something to think about today, although people don't bring it up, because I think we generally rent that city symbolically from the mayor, and we think that works because we don't think we're in control. We think they're in control. Oh, complicated question. But Rav Menashe Klein suggests that if you have a Jew who abandoned observance, right, even whether or not it might be a Tinok Shinish, but it might be somebody who doesn't count their observance, is not considered, their lack of observance is not considered a deliberate violation of the Torah because they don't know what they're doing. Or let's say it does count, and it's not, let's say they're not Tinok Shinish, but it's still true that he thinks that doesn't count as what the Gemara was worried about when it said as a problem. So that would be one set of issues to think about, is what's the relationship and how's the effect of having both non-Jews and non-observant Jews be part of a community that's building an Eruv. But the question that I thought we did have some time to focus a little bit on is, what do you do with the key? because you're taking the key from outside. When you open the door, you're putting it inside. Now, in their case, they're talking about you had a cheder habadrigot, you had a separate room for the stairs, and then a separate room for the house itself. But it's still the same kind of a question. You're moving from one reshut, one area, to another area, when you're not allowed to do that on Shabbat, when there's no Eruv. And Eruv makes it all one big halakhic area. So what do you do about it? So one suggestion that he made was that when the key is in the lock, do you say that's now what's called batel to the door, and therefore you can open the door with the key in the lock, and it's not like you're moving the key because the key is just sort of part of the door, and then it goes in, and it's not considered tiltal, and then once it's in, you can take it out. That was one option that he suggested, that the guy asking the question suggested, who's a relative of Menashe Klein's. The other possibility suggested is, can you turn the key in the lock, right, and unlock it, and then don't open the door, but I guess open it enough that it's not going to lock again. Take the key out and put the key on the threshold, right, and then open the door. So how does that help? Because when you put the key on the threshold, when the door was closed, you weren't doing anything because it was closed. It was a closed off area. You're not inserting it into a new area. You're not violating the Torah in that way. So, but now that it's on the threshold, once the door is open, that threshold becomes part of now this open doorway in this open house, and therefore you can take the key in. That was the other possibility. So Rav Menashe Klein is not a fan of either suggestion, basically. For the first suggestion, he says, if you did that, then when you, if you're going to say that the key sort of becomes batel, becomes subservient, or like sort of absorbed into the door, so then you couldn't do it on Shabbos because it would be a problem with binyan. It's adding to the door. We don't add to structures on Shabbat. We're not allowed to. Since if you're going to tell me it's batel, it becomes part of the structure, and you're not allowed to do that on Shabbat. And then you also couldn't take it out because then you're removing things from a structure. We don't do that. So you get into a problem with this other malacha of bonim. You're worried about the malacha of hotza'av, taking things into and out of certain kinds of spaces, but you're really getting yourself into the problem of bonim. But Rav Menashe Klein is really seeming to think that, and he based it on sources that we're not going to get into right now, but that that in these kinds of situations, if you don't have the key already, there are Gemara's that talk about, you know, if a child or a non-Jew brings you the key, that talks about that you have to wait till that person is sort of with you under the doorway, and that doorway might be able to be enough of a covering that you're no longer in the Carmelite, and then you can open the door. But it basically seems to think that once you open the door, you have to take the key out before opening the door fully, and then leave the key wherever you hid it before, because you're not allowed to bring it in, because you can't see a way to bring it in. So he says it's better, especially in the cases of shuls that need to be open, you're going to have non-Jews helping you open the shuls, to build an area that's also Rishon HaYachid, that's also a private space, and then it's all part of the same private space, and then you won't have the problem. The non-Jew will bring you the key, but already will have brought it into the private space, and then when you open the door, you can put it in. So that's his fundamental answer, is that what you want to do is you want to try to make sure that in your space, in your doorway, that you have something that makes it already a private space right around it, so that you can take the key from wherever you're hiding, wherever you're putting it, should be in the same halakhic space as the doorway, such that you can put it in. That's not always easy to do, but that's his basic answer. So I did this tshuva a little bit too quickly, a little bit too superficially, but I'm going to stop here because I don't want to get in, because it would take me too long to get into the technicalities of it. So all we have is our responsibility day for the second day of Rosh Chodesh Adar. The first day of Adar is Rav Moshe Feinstein talking about the walkie-talkies of Hatzalah volunteers, and his basic point is, A, which he agrees with, A, Hatzalah volunteers, to ask them to stay at home the entire time they're on duty would be problematic and onerous, and maybe would get people not to volunteer for Hatzalah. Therefore, and B, that we see from the sugya about wearing swords on Shabbat, that the wearing of Hatzalah walkie-talkie on Shabbat can be considered not only an item of use, that doesn't make it wearable and allowable to be worn without an Eruv, but that it's also a marker of distinction and a sign of honor, and that makes it like a tachshit and therefore wearable by Hatzalah volunteers on Shabbat. And that was a whole discussion about what's considered an honor, not an honor. It got us some issues of what will happen and won't happen in the days of Mashiach. And then we saw very briefly Rav Menashe Klein's tshuva about what you do about a key where there's no Eruv, and the question of, A, can you put the key in? Can you take the key out? And how you handle that with the key? And a little bit about the status of non-Jews and non-observant Jews in terms of how they affect our ability to construct Eruvin, where Rav Menashe Klein says that the only kind of a Jew who would be a problem is a heretic who's still observant, somebody who fully observes the Torah but doesn't agree with us about the nature of Torah, about the nature of halacha. That kind of person would be a deep problem for us. But the kind of Jew who's just sadly and unfortunately non-observant, that he doesn't seem to think would be a problem for building an Eruv. And that is a responsive day for the second day of Rosh Chodesh Adar, the first of Adar. Have a great day.